It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Hope you're having an excellent week thus far. Good to be back at it here on the podcast. It's always powered by KSLSports.com, your insider look into BYU athletics. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave that five-star rating and a review. So here's what we got on tap for today's podcast. Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Preview is going to hop onto the program and break down BYU. I've told you before, I love college football preview magazines, and I've got a huge collection of them. Brett's magazine, this is the first year I've owned Brett Ciancia's Pick 6 Previews, and I got to say, it's really interesting. There's a lot of stats. There's a lot of numbers. It's good stuff. So you Cougar fans that I know love the numbers and love analytics, it's worth a read, and you're going to find out why coming up a little bit later in the show. Also, get the player countdown back on track. Had some previous priors to attend to on the podcast, so getting back at it on the player countdown, getting up to speed on all the players that I missed the past few days, so that should be a lot of fun. And then also, anonymous coaches break down BYU football in 2020, and that's where we'll start things off here. But before we get into that, though, subscribe to the show, like I said, and follow me on Twitter at Mitch_Harper, Instagram, Mitch Harper KSL, and follow KSL Sports at KSL Sports, KSLSports.com. So Athlon Sports, not KSL Sports, Athlon Sports. Athlon put out their annual publication, and it's good stuff. I love college football magazines. I'm just geeking out on all these magazines as of late. But Athlon put out their anonymous coaches section on BYU. Each team preview in Athlon, they do this, quote, scouting the insert team name. And anonymous opposing coaches, usually within a conference, they size up a team. Well, BYU, of course, doesn't have a conference, so it just says opposing coaches. I would assume, now this is just my guess, it's either going to be Utah, Boise State, or Utah State. And I say that because, well, those are the three teams that always appear on BYU's schedule for more times than not. So I would imagine those are the coaches that have the most intel on BYU. Just a hunch, just a guess there. But here's what they have to say on BYU in 2020. It starts out, quote, "Their returning starting quarterback Zach Wilson might not be their best option. I think there's going to be a full-on race through camp, and they might make a change this season. With his injuries, he kind of plateaued." Strong statement there on Zach Wilson, to be quite honest. And I'll be honest, I'm surprised that that's a comment, really. I you know, here on the podcast, I like me some with Zach Wilson. I think he's BYU's best quarterback. I don't think there's any debate. To me, there's really no debate going into this season. I think that you continue to have the competition, meaning that, hey, Zach, you got to perform well. And if you don't perform well, Jaron Hall and Baylor Romney are more than capable to step right in and be the starting quarterback. And that's a good luxury to have for BYU. And what's nice for the Cougars is that Jaron Hall, he's a BYU guy. Baylor Romney, he's a BYU guy. His wife is a track and field athlete at BYU. They like being at BYU. So it kind of gives BYU a luxury where you can make everyone happy and still have a talented and loaded quarterback room. As you see around the country, when quarterbacks do not be named, are not named the starter, they usually bolt. They usually enter the portal and go to another program. That's not the case for BYU, and they're in a great spot when it comes to that QB position, including Sol J. Maiava joins the program as well this fall. So there's a lot of talent to be had, but it's interesting to think of an opposing coach is saying this. Because I look at last year with Zach Wilson, and I know statistically in pretty much every area he did dip. But I point to the injuries on that. With Zach Wilson, the shoulder recovery from the shoulder surgery, and then the thumb injury on his throwing hand, which, by the way, Zach, just putting it out there, don't ever try to tackle on an interception. I know that people blasted Jake Heaps for it, but I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't want the quarterbacks getting injured for a tackle. Hey, probably best thing would probably be to not throw any picks. That's probably the message I should put out there. But if you do throw a pick, just let someone else make the tackle. It's just too risky for a quarterback. But I like that Zach is coming in this season a little bit bigger, around 215 or so. Zach's going to be beefier. He's going to be a bigger body. He's going to be able to withstand the hits better this year. And I think he's going to be a better quarterback. His arm is a little bit livelier. You saw it in spring football. It's back to where it was his high school senior season. Zach's a good player, and I think he's going to have a huge bounce back year. And if he can stay healthy, and I know that's hard to ask for any BYU quarterback because it's been a long time since BYU had one quarterback each and every game of a season. You got to go back to 2013 for that to happen. But if it does, I think Zach Wilson could be a 3,000-yard quarterback this year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility when you got a guy like Devontae Henry Cole in the backfield and capable wide receivers. I think Zach Wilson will definitely be that starting quarterback for BYU this fall against Utah in week one. But then also, too, I think he's going to be able to navigate the season and be the starter. I think I really chalk up a lot of the struggles last year with maybe some lack of continuity in terms of consistency and play calling. It felt like there was different schemes. There was different game plans last year through stretches of the season. And the injuries also played a big role as well. But, you know, if Zach does have games where he's coughing up the football left and right, he could be benched. But keep in mind, too, not every interception is equal. And not every interception is blamed on, I think, Zach Wilson. Like, you go back and watch that Washington game, for example, a lot of that was sometimes on the wide receivers. So, again, but quarterback is the most visible spot. It comes with the most praise. It comes with the most expectations. And when you get a guy that's heading into his third year as the quarterback, people tend to always want the new thing. They want the new guy. And they're kind of like, we've seen this song and dance with this cat. We want the new guy. So I get all that. But I think Zach Wilson is going to prove the naysayers wrong. And I think he's going to do a really good job. It's an important year for Zach. No doubt about it. And I think he realizes that. That's why I think physically he's changing his body type. Going down to Huntington Beach with 3D QB, I think, is a huge thing for him. And I think he's due for a big bounce back year. But that's the read on the quarterback room by the anonymous coaches in Athlon. Some other anonymous scouting by these anonymous coaches. BYU was really banged up in the secondary. There's potential here. It's really all about their health on defense. You think maybe they've got issues with conditioning only because you see a lot of their guys go down. They've definitely been bit hard by the injury bug while Kalani Sitake has been there. And after a while, you take a look and see if you're causing any of that. It's a valid point. They're never going to surprise you, but they're going to play you really mean and really hard. And they have a tremendous home field advantage in Provo. I don't know about that. I mean, BYU last few years in Provo has not been great. I mean, the Boise State win was nice, and the USC win was really nice. I don't know about a tremendous home field advantage when it's at its peak back in 2006 to 2009, yeah. But haven't seen that in 11 years. Continuing on, they can level out some of the middle of the road P5s when they catch them at home. The question inside the program is, when are we going to take that next step? But I think the question outside of it is, why do they think they can do the same things the same ways and get different results? Every year, this is a roster that's one of the better-looking G5s on paper, and they can reach up and beat a P5, but they're not athletic or deep enough to look like the P5 they think they can be. They just aren't. End quote. Interesting stuff there from Athlon Sports' anonymous scouting report, and I think, honestly, you know, much has been made about the schedule as an independent. I think it's the right path to go. If you're going to be an independent football program, you got to schedule up. BYU, though, has got to start winning. They got to win big. If they win big and they create an identity on both offense and defense, you'll start to see the recruiting classes potentially formed. That hasn't happened. No identity has been shaped under Kalani Sitake. And that's why I don't think you've seen this windfall of recruits fall BYU's way. The BYU brand is a strong one, and it's one that I think a lot of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints want to be part of. But if you don't have a brand and you don't have an identity that consistently you can turn to that well and you know what type of program they are week in, week out, game in, game out, it's going to be hard to get recruiting. And that's why I think you've seen a little bit of a dip in terms of team recruiting rankings. But keep in mind, the player development has been very good at BYU. I think it's, I wouldn't say very good, but I think it's trending up and it's going in a direction where you're going to see this program have more depth, I think more competitive depth, and I think more overall speed and athleticism than we've seen in years past. The problem is that it's a lot of, you know, two-star guys, three-star guys that have to, you hope and pray that they leave BYU as four or five-star talents. That hasn't happened quick enough, but hey, the commitment to youth movement should have its payoff eventually in the coming year. So that's the scouting report by anonymous coaches in Athlon Sports. I did a write-up on that on kslsports.com. You can go check it out on our website. So Athlon Sports is one preseason magazine. Another one you need to check out is Pick 6 Previews. Listen to my interview with Brett Ciancia, who introduces BYU to his preview for the first time since his publication started last year. This is my interview with Brett Ciancia.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into Cougar Tracks here on kslsports.com and KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. Mitch Harper here, and for those of you who know me, you know I love college football magazines. I obsess over them. I mean, seriously, I've got a collection that dates back to 1979. I'm not kidding. A few of those have been handed down from my dad, but since around 95, I've been religiously buying college football magazines, and I'm pretty sure my wife wants me to get rid of all of them, but I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. Anyways, there's the usual suspects on the magazine circuit, but a new upstart publication that was created in 2012 but became a book magazine last year, and it's in its second year of publication. Pick 6 Previews is gaining traction in the college football world as the years go by. I'm pleased now to be joined by the founder of Pick 6 Previews and Heisman voter, Brett Ciancia. Brett, welcome on in Cougar Tracks.
Yeah, Mitch, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to have added BYU to our coverage this year. Historically, Pick 6 Previews is a Power 5 preview with the five conferences and Notre Dame. But, you know, just from seeing how passionate this BYU base is on Twitter and online and some of the pushback last year, I had to add them. So I'm excited to have done a deep dive here, researched some of the history, the coaching schemes, and yeah, I'm excited to talk BYU football here.
And well, tell us a little bit more about the publication, Pick 6 Previews. You can go to pick6previews.com, follow Brett on Twitter, at Pick 6 Previews on Twitter. Tell us a little bit more about the publication and ultimately what led you to putting BYU in this year's preview.
Yeah, so about my preview book, it's a one-man show. It's all 66 teams, about 1,300 to 1,800 words. But really what goes into that is over 1,000 hours of film study, calls with coaches, calls with coordinators, local radio and local podcasts, just like this one. You know, reading game stories, practice reports, and then also my analytics. And I try and stand out a bit from the legacy brands of previews for a couple facets here. One, I like to bring in a lot of program history. just to put into context the current unit, the current stats, I have my analytics here on the page. It's a ton of graphics and stats, but not just the analytics. I like to bring them back into a very readable form because, you know, it's boring to read about, oh, BYU was 0.012 in this metric. You got to understand what it's doing here. So I bring the numbers, I bring them, you know, into a readable form that any football guy would like. And after the release of my 2019 book, the initial one last year, I was selected to become a Heisman voter. And then after, you know, just a week into this 2020 launch, I just got endorsed by Chris Felica, the Bear, as we all know him and love on College Game Day. So high praise here. I'm excited to keep building this thing. And your question about adding BYU, I often get asked, what's the best rivalry in college football? And everyone always says the Iron Bowl or Iowa State, Michigan. If you're going off of Twitter, you know, Twitter emotion and fire, and I call this a 365-day rivalry, it's got to be Utah-BYU. I mean, I see it, you know, because I was covering Utah for a few years there, just the every day. I mean, it'll be the middle of February, and I see some tweets pop up about, you know, oh, the talent gap or this, you know, this 9-game win streak. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, on a higher level, I really respect both fan bases, the passion, the knowledge, because, you know, on the coast oftentimes and in some of these professional cities, college football takes a back seat and there's not that fire that you see. And in Salt Lake City market and Provo and then BYU's national following, it pops right off the page how passionate these fan bases are. So I'm excited to have added them and start to connect with more Cougars.
Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, is my guest. And, yeah, no doubt Salt Lake City is definitely a college football market. There's no doubt about that. And I know Cougar fans are going to be thrilled to pick this up because I've been following you for a long time on social media, Brett. And I always think of those tweets that you were mentioning about that maybe factor in BYU or Utah. But, you know, some of the ones that always stand out to me that you kind of update on an annual basis on your Twitter account, and you've got them noted here in your publication as well, is the winningest programs over the last 40 or 50 years. And BYU tends to find itself in those lists. So I'm glad that you noted that in your preview because BYU football, it's got a rich history, and I'm glad that's noted in your book.
Yeah, big time. And, you know, I put out those lists. BYU also excels in the win conversion metric that I do, which compares recruiting rankings to on-field success. I think actually their Twitter handle used my graphic or used my stat in one of their graphics. But the years list or the wins over different year intervals always catches some eyes from some of the younger viewers on Twitter because they don't usually think of BYU in a national sense like that. But yeah, it was a very dominant 40-year or 35-year run there. I had this in the preview where from 75 to 2010, that was the year that they broke off into independence. That 35-year stretch, BYU was fourth nationally in wins, and half those years were double-digit win seasons and half were ranked finishes. But now, when you moved into the independent stage here, the last 9 years, zero ranked finishes. So a program change, it was, I guess, BYU kind of got caught there at a crossroads with 2010 major conference realignment. It's almost like the music stopped during musical chairs and BYU was left out. But I think they made the most of it. I think if you're a BYU fan, you got to be excited about these opponents they're bringing in. It's essentially a Power 5 schedule anyway. Plus, a lot of these non-AQs that they schedule are always the toughest in the country. So, without a doubt, glad I included them. It was a great deep dive into the history and the current roster and everything. So, definitely.
You talk about the win conversion a few moments ago, and I saw that in your book. You had BYU number 3. Maybe just give us a brief synopsis of what that entails, the win conversion rate.
Yeah, so recruiting is talked about all over the place, and rightfully so. Everyone has their opinion. I think that they miss on a certain player's grade? Yeah, sure. It happens all the time. But I think when you start to look at 25 players in a class, or even 4 and 5 classes in a row, and you're talking about 80 to 100 kids, I think that those recruiting rankings are more right than wrong in the aggregate. But that's just the starting point when you start to evaluate programs because, you know, programs all over the place, they recruit well and can't win and vice versa. So I start with recruiting. It's definitely the backbone of a program. But how a coach and a staff can convert that into NFL prospects and convert that into wins on the field, I think is even more important. So my win conversion in a sentence is comparing the raw recruiting rankings to on-field success and on-field wins. And that it tends to show, you know, a coach's scheme, how they identify prospects to fit their system, in-game strategy, that kind of thing. And it's a lot of the teams that you'd expect to pop off the page in that regard who Maybe they don't recruit well on signing day, but you know you're getting a consistently winning product like the Iowas, the Wisconsins, and Utah and BYU, both of them. So that's where I want to take an extra step, because recruiting is important, but it is just the start of this whole story.
Brett Cianci is my guest. You can get his preview at pick6previews.com, and it's an in-depth 161 pages. You got to pick it up. And I'm curious, Brett, when you look at this 2020 edition of BYU football, what stands out with this group heading into a season where, in the last few years, it's been 7-6? What do you make of year number 5 for Kalani Sitake heading into 2020?
Yeah, so I think that this year the offense takes a step. You know, the numbers would have suggested that it would have occurred last year, and it started to at points. I mean, you saw some flashes there from Zach Wilson, especially back in the 2018 bowl game, going perfect, 18 for 18 passing. So you know he has the accuracy. But just watching him on tape, I mean, he's shifty. He's elusive in the pocket. He's quick enough to scramble if needed. And, yeah, he shows that accuracy. So, but, yeah, injuries were an issue last year. I think that was probably the theme of the offense, you know, obviously with Wilson himself. But then the offensive line, they were just crushed with injuries. I think it was 16 different starting combos or something throughout the year. So pretty high number there. But even then, even through all the uncertainty and the injuries and shifting, it was still a solid unit offensive line-wise. Brady Christensen is definitely the star there at left tackle, and that unit's back and healthy. So, I mean, they're a strong bunch. I think that what we thought would be the big jump on offense last year, I think it could happen here in 2020.
Your game grader is one of my favorite things in your preview, Brett. You ranked the best, worst game grades for each team over the last 5 years, and one thing stood out. When we talk about maybe BYU's offense coming into 2020, one thing that stood out from your game grader was BYU's win over Utah State being number 2 on the game grader. And I bring that up because the quarterbacks in that game for BYU were Jaren Hall and Baylor Romney, not Zach Wilson. Yet that game grades out as the second best in your great game grader. Tell us a little bit about the game grader and also your thoughts on Zach Wilson and the rest of the quarterbacks that BYU has coming in the season.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up game grader because, you know, kind of one of the themes of my preview and what makes it stand out from the others is you hear these buzzwords across the nation about, like we already talked about, player development or, you know, who's, you know, all these buzzwords. My goal is to bring those buzzwords and actually get some numbers behind them and see if we can actually dig into this and get an actual numeric answer outside the narrative. And that's what I try to do with game grader. What it is it looks at scoring differential, yardage differential, a lot of per play metrics, yards per play, you know, how often you give up explosive plays, how efficient you are, all of these in-game metrics, and just adjust for opponent and adjust for pace of play. It sounds like a word salad there, but basically what it is, it shows you the statistical dominance of a team. And it's especially important for BYU here and Notre Dame for that matter, because without a consistent pool of opponents, year in and year out, within a conference or a division, it was kind of hard for me to gauge where they stacked up without it. So what this does, it shows us that BYU graded out 39th out of the 66 Power 5 teams, which is about middle of the pack last year. And they've been around that in that 30 to 40 range pretty much all the way back to the Bronco Mendenhall era. Those were some top 25 teams there in the early 2010s. But game grader is a way to show how a team's doing statistically against their opponents. And the last note on that is, because not all wins and losses are created equal. You could say they were 7 wins, but, you know, were they all by 1 point? Were they all by 50 points? Were they against non-AQ teams? Were they against Power 5 teams? So with so many variables, I needed a numeric way to kind of grade these teams. So, and yeah, so the reason individually about that Utah State game, why it pops out would be just the yardage differential. They dominated them. I think it was a plus 100 yards. You know, to beat a Utah State team by 28 and then win the turnover margin big, all of that amounts to a pretty high grade and one of the BYU's highest over the last couple of years.
Brett Cianci is my guest, and we're talking BYU football 2020 preview. Brett has a in-depth pick six previews that you can go check out at pick6previews.com, and it's year 10 of independence. You noted earlier, you know, BYU was left out of conference realignment back in 2010. It was kind of fun. I revisited realignment earlier this month with some of the old individuals like Dan Beebe and from the Big 12 and stuff. It was really fun stuff to kind of revisit because it's already been 10 years. But your independence has posed great opportunities with scheduling. And this year is no exception because the scheduling is starting to ramp up a little bit for BYU as they enter year number 10 of independence. They got six Power 5 programs on the schedule. Which of these six Power 5s do you think is the toughest BYU will face in 2020, Brett?
So I think the toughest, the only ranked team in my preview actually out of those six would be Minnesota, who I have checking in at 22. They're a bit uncertain on defense. They lose a lot of three-year guys and veteran stars on defense. The offense we saw last year was solid, and they have a lot of playmakers there. Tanner Morgan's very efficient with the ball thrown to Rashad Bateman and Chris Alvin Bell on the outsides and a power run game. So offensively, that'll be a strong test for BYU. Right behind Minnesota would be the two Pac-12 South teams, Utah and Arizona State, who both grade right in that top 30 range. Utah, I mean, you guys are, what is it, know your enemy more than yourself?
yeah,
you guys
right.
know all about Utah, the transition they're going through on defense, but also how they have tended to reload on defense too with their scheme. So, but also a new quarterback change there without a spring ball. So, and you catch them in the opening game. I don't want to say it, but it could be the opportunity to finally break that streak there. I don't know how many other opportunities they'll get like this, where it's such a young defense, nine starters new, a lot of them, and the whole secondary is new. And that's without a spring ball. So that's Utah and Arizona State. It's also a strong defense there in the Pac-12 South. But better quarterback play. Jaden Daniels is incredible with the ball. Very, takes care of it. Does not turn the ball over. But they are switching defense and offense to coordinator changes. And I don't want to keep bringing up coordinator changes. Normally I wouldn't. But in this offseason, without a spring ball and shortened summer practices, I tended to rely on program continuity a bit more and roster continuity a bit more than I would, just given that I don't know how they can implement a new scheme that efficiently in that short of time. So not to keep mentioning. But then, so those are probably the three toughest. I think Michigan State should be a win for BYU. You're talking about a team that really has gone downhill the back half of that D'Antonio regime. Again, loses a lot of star power on defense to the pros. The offense, if you've watched any Michigan State football, in the last couple of years, it really isn't even an offense. It's just like, a time waster until they could punt. So I think BYU wins that game, especially with it being in Provo. Missouri, they catch in a coach change, and Stanford is not the Stanford of the 2010s anymore. This is, they are a shell of themselves. It's no longer that power front seven and a massive offensive line that was bigger than the Packers. That's all gone. This is, it's a shell of themselves, like I said, and I don't think that they'll be a player in the Pac-12. So I think that there's BYU would probably be favored in two or three of those. It's tough that the three hardest are all on the road. So we'll see about that. And we touched on this pre-call here, but BYU also on top of almost the Power 5 schedule itself, they're always pulling in the top non-AQs too. So, I mean, you're drawing Boise State again, and I think that's an annual series. San Diego State was one of the best defenses in the country last year, just nasty on defense. Houston is almost a Big 12 program in terms of facilities and resources and recruiting. And then Utah State, another in-state rival. So it's a brutal, brutal schedule. But if you're a BYU fan, you got to like the new opponents, the fresh blood there, and, challenges, national challenges.
How would you stack up that schedule compared to, Power 5 programs? Because you're in-depth with all the Power 5 programs covering these guys. How would you stack it up against teams that face, eight or nine Power 5 teams? How would it stack up, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it'd be a little bit lower. Just because, when you look at this, I tried to compare where I had the teams finishing within their leagues. It's six Power 5s, but where are they within their league?
Sure.
So Utah, I have second in the Pac-12 South, Arizona State third. So kind of, above average. Minnesota, same thing, second in the Big Ten West. And then Michigan State, I have towards the bottom of the Big Ten, Missouri towards the bottom of the SEC, and Stanford towards the bottom of the Pac-12. So to me, it's about three above average Power 5s and three below average Power 5s. So while you don't hit some of those nation worsts like Kansas or Rutgers, you also aren't hitting some of those, top-notch division champs or conference champ winners. So I'd say it's about average, but that's something to be said about an independent and credit them for scheduling a lot of tough teams here.
Before I let you go, Brett, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we're going to do it here. How many wins do you think BYU gets in 2020?
I see them going 7-5 or 8-4. you know, real quick, I think the three road games against the Power Five, as you mentioned, those will be tough. They'll be underdogs. Boise State, to be honest, I don't cover the Mountain West as much as I should. I just know that on their track record, them and Utah State will both be tough. Utah State does lose Jordan Love, and I think their offensive coordinator is gone to Minnesota, ironically. And then, of course, with Houston, second year under Dana Holgorsen. So I'm pretty confident, though, that overall I think BYU takes a step forward. I think that offense will be will get a surge that we thought we would have had maybe 2019, but with health and with experience, you see that. And before we do that, one last note on defense was that, you know, it was always a staple under Bronco Mendenhall to have that tough, aggressive, swarming unit on defense. But the first four Satake defenses, average rank is 100, you know, so in aggressiveness and my negative play percentage, which is kind of, you know, sacks, tackles for loss, no gain plays, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a different defense than we used to see. If they can get that defense even to average or even a slightly above average metric and have the offense take that leap, then 8 wins, 9 wins is not out of the ballpark. Because like I said, there are no dominant top 10, top 15 teams on the schedule. You know, the move from, say, number 40 BYU to number 20 BYU could make this a 7-win to a 10-win season. You know what I mean? So slight improvements could be a big difference in the win-loss column, playing a lot of these average to above-average teams.
You can follow him on Twitter, at Pick 6 Previews on Twitter. Go buy his magazine, Pick 6 Previews, at picksixpreviews.com. Go in the upper right corner, I believe. It says 2020 Season Preview. He is Brett Ciancia. Brett, any last things before we go, where people can go and buy the magazine? I think I nailed it down, right?
Yeah, you did nail it. It's just at Pick 6 Previews Twitter and picksixpreviews.com. And on there, I know I'm kind of new to the preview scene, but for that reason, I've included a few sample pages. I have Auburn and Boston College as two random teams up there for you to see the format and the set of infographics that I have and the level of detail of write-ups. I have some testimonials there, too, from some prominent media, too. So, give us a look, and I appreciate you having me on, Mitch, and hopefully we'll talk during the season.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, Brett. And congrats on all of your success and looking forward to talking again soon. Take care, Brett.
Thank you.
All right, big thanks to Brett Ciancia for hopping onto the program. That was good stuff from Brett. I told him before the interview, I said, hey, Brett, you're going to make all the rounds on BYU media stops. Like, it was a good business decision for Brett to add BYU to the preview because, as you know, Cougar fans listening, you know there's a lot of BYU mediums. There's myself. There's BYU TV. There's a lot of different platforms that cover BYU on a consistent basis. And Brett's going to be able to get that name, the Pick 6 Previews name, out in front of Cougar fans. We're happy to help him out and talk about the Cougars. And I got to say, this preview, I'm reading it, it's good stuff. The game grader is really fascinating to me. And again, it highlights how good that Utah State win was last year. Aesthetically, visually, statistically, the final score, everything about it. Plus, on top, it was a rivalry game, and BYU was an underdog. Remember that? They go up to Logan and crush the Aggies 42-14. And they did it in dominating fashion with two different quarterbacks. It was a great game. I think it's the one game that you point to and you say, when we talked earlier about Zach Wilson and the anonymous coaches saying maybe he's not the best quarterback, that's the game you point to that maybe raises questions as to, does Jaren Hall have a higher ceiling? Maybe he does. He's coming off two concussions, though. Does Baylor Romney, is he more consistent that you can rely on him more? Not as much of a riverboat gambler, if you will. He's going to be consistent. The short intermediate throws, quick, precise. Is that more reliable that BYU needs? We'll see. I still think Zach Wilson's the guy, but BYU's got great quarterback play. But that game grader was interesting to see how good of a performance that was compared to the last 5 years. But keep in mind, though, the last 5 years, BYU has had a lot of duds. Let's be honest. BYU football, I know you Cougar fans listening, you know. Some of these games that you've sat through for BYU football the past 5 years, goodness gracious. They've taken years off lives. I mean, go back to 2015, the Missouri game. That was brutal. 2016, the Utah game, you get 6 takeaways and you only end up with 19 points. Are you kidding me? Come on now. 2017, the whole season was just awful. Awful. My goodness, that was terrible. LSU, East Carolina, UMass. But UMass was almost like people were just kind of like, eh, it is what it is. Just, it is what it is. Like, but LSU and East Carolina were the games that just make you go, wow, just getting obliterated, just wrecked. It's insane. But Pick 6 Previews, though, go check it out. Pick6previews.com. Brett Ciancia does a good job. I like to take credit. I like to take credit for him being a fixture in the Salt Lake sports radio market, because if it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be on another station talking about the Utes all the time. Just saying. I was a producer once for old Bill Riley, who used to work for KSL back in the day. But I used to produce for Bill, and I said, hey, Bill, we need to get this Brett Ciancia guy. He knows the stuff about college football. So I appreciate Brett. He does a great job, and I highly recommend you going to pick up his Pick 6 Preview magazine. We got to get back on track with the player countdown. I know I had a little bit of a dip in performance. I had a East Carolina-like performance recently. I know. I get it. I'm guilty as charged with that. Okay, we're getting back up to speed, though. Let's get back at it. So here's the players that we got to get up to speed. Andrew Slack, Fisher Jackson, Chandon Herring, Harris LeChance, JT Gentry, Kiefer Longson, Caden Haas, Seth Willis. Now, unless you're a weirdo like me who enjoys trench play and in the offensive line and defensive lines, you probably don't want to hear extensive breakdowns. So honestly, this probably worked out quite nicely that we're not doing extensive breakdowns on these linemen, these beefy, massive linemen. They're 6'5", 300+. And man, I'll tell you, BYU has got some huge, humongous human beings. They're massive. They're big dudes. And that's why you won football. And BYU has got linemen that look the part of a big-time college football line. Like, I haven't seen Alabama's defensive line, offensive line in person. But I see the measurements. I see the numbers. You know, BYU's got big dudes that can compare with them in terms of size. Now, in terms of skill, maybe that's a different argument. But I'm high on BYU's offensive line, no doubt about it. Defensive line's got some questions, but I think there's room to grow. And I think BYU's going to get better this year on the defensive front if they play that 4-3 deep base package. But let's dive into the player countdown here. Andrew Slack, he's a true freshman, comes back from a mission, originally signed with Weber State, 6'5", 290-pound offensive lineman, defensive lineman at Springville High School, served at Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints mission to Fiji. Now, Slack got some reps in spring football at defensive end. Again, he could play either side of the ball. He was kind of a surprise addition back in December when the mid-year enrollees were announced. Slack is, I believe, on scholarship. So he counts towards the 85-man scholarships because he was publicly announced by BYU. But again, formerly a Weber State signee, a two-star prospect out of Springville High School. Chandon Herring, offensive lineman, already heading into a senior season. How crazy is that? 6'7", 310 pounds. Got a lot of starter experience last season. I expect he'll probably be a starter again at guard this year. Herring is one of the biggest. We talk about humongous human beings. 6'7", 310, he's massive. Herring was a little bit of a surprise to emerge at starter at guard last year. But the coaching staff, really high on him. Coach Mateos, Coach Grimes, they really like Chandon Herring. And I think, again, when you're talking about a pandemic, you're talking about a shortened spring football, you're going to get back up to speed, you know, fall camp. You're going to rely on the continuity, the guys you know you can count on in a game. And Chandon Herring's got a lot of reps, and he's got a lot of in-game experience. So I think when you're talking about the competition at that guard spot, that right guard position, Chandon Herring's going to probably have the inside track to win the job. If the season was today, I'm picking Chandon Herring. A man that wears the same number as Chandon Herring is Fisher Jackson. Now, you probably don't know the name. Fisher Jackson is another one of these just insane freaks that comes from Harriman High School. I don't know what they do out in Harriman. Harriman High School just produces some freaky human beings that are massive, one, and then they're incredible athletes. Now, Jackson has grown a lot in terms of weight since his last season at Harriman High School. He was a graduate in the 2019 class. He committed to BYU as a preferred walk-on. He gray-shirted last fall. And remember, coming out of Harriman High School, he was a wide receiver, tight end, safety.
Now he's 6'5", 252 pounds, and he's, I believe, a scholarship athlete this year. Jackson is going to play along the defensive line, and I would not be surprised if you hear his name in games this year where he's getting playing time. Like, you're going to see him every week in the participation chart. Now, how many snaps does he get? I don't know. But this is not going to be a guy that's just played four games and then that's it. He's going to play almost every single week. If it clicks for him and he's having success early on, like, he'll be very limited early on against the Power 5 teams. But the plays and the opportunities and the snaps he gets this year, if it clicks in a hurry for him, he's going to get every opportunity in the back half of the schedule to be a significant contributor and really lay the groundwork for him to be a guy that's a four-year letter earner who's playing week in, week out, and having a big role on BYU's defensive line throughout his BYU career. So it's a name that probably no one knows anything about right now, but keep an eye on Fisher Jackson. He's worth following this season for BYU. Harris LeChance, 6'8", 310 pounds, sophomore out of, you guessed it, Harriman High School. Like Fisher Jackson, another freak, good athlete. Last year, I really thought Harris LeChance was going to be that starting right tackle for BYU. I was high on Harris LeChance. I still am. He's a really good, I think, a second string guy. Could play a lot of different spots along the offensive line. But for whatever reason, guys like Keanu Saliapaga and Blake Freeland ended up beating out LeChance. Now, but again, you're talking about a 6'8" guy, 310 pounds, in your second unit along the offensive line. That speaks to the depth that's along that offensive line right now for BYU. Another offensive lineman, JT Gentry, 6'5", 340 pounds. Goodness gracious. Gentry's getting big. Sophomore out of Littleton, Colorado, Columbine High School. Now, the elephant in the room with JT Gentry, and I kind of wonder about it. Don't you? Don't you think? What is that dynamic like when his younger brother, Andrew Gentry, a guy that BYU recruited heavily, and I think towards the tail end it was, BYU clearly wanted him. I think BYU feels very good about their offensive linemen and the guys in the pipeline going forward. Like, it's not a dagger to the program to not get Andrew Gentry, but he ends up signing with Virginia and Bronco Mendenhall. And just kind of wonder, like, that dynamic in the locker room, like, come on, JT, why didn't you get him to BYU? You know, like, yeah, each kid is going to make their own decisions. Full transparency, I get all that. But it's still just kind of a interesting dynamic because JT's being coached up by the guys that were actively recruiting Andrew, and Andrew was a four-star guy. I mean, he was a guy that was a top 100 recruit by some outlets. So kind of an interesting dynamic, but JT Gentry, someone to watch, might be a fringe second-string guy. We'll see. He didn't really get into the conversation much at all last year as a two-deep player, but his biggest attribute might be he's the smartest player in the football program. You talk about the guys that get the 4.8 out of a 4.0 GPA scale. That's JT Gentry. Another offensive lineman, guard, key or tackle, depending on where you want to put him at, Kiefer Longson, 6'7", 315 pounds. My goodness. Kiefer is a guy that just, he's built like a lineman. You just go and watch the guy. He is truly a offensive lineman. I want to see Kiefer have a big year, man. Heralded recruit coming out of high school, had offers from Florida State, Ohio State. I mean, the who's who. The college football world was recruiting Kiefer Longson. Last year, I thought he was going to be that starting guard where Chandon Herring ended up. But keep in mind, Longson ended up with a foot injury that kept him out for the last 8 weeks of the season. He was out and done for the year. So he's still recovering from the foot injury, should be ready to go for fall camp. But Kiefer, already in a senior year. Time flies. It's insane how that works. Switching over to the defensive line, a guy that played offensive line last year but got reps in spring ball on the D-line is Keaton Hawes, 6'2", 315-pound redshirt freshman out of Arkansas. He was the Pulaski Academy, the team that never goes or never punts. They always go for it on fourth down. Keaton Hawes was on that team in high school. Could move back to offensive line depending on who emerges potentially as the backup center behind James Empey. But Caden Hawes was your number two center last year. Ethan Tagi now goes to Weber State. You could see Caden Haas, who got reps defensive line in spring ball, move back to offensive line in the fall. That's very possible. Some other options at center, I could see, you know, maybe potentially Clark Barrington could go in at the center spot. So there's some moving around. Maybe you could have Tristan Hodge potentially too as the backup center if anything happened to James Empey. So, I mean, you're not going to pull James Empey. Like, he's going to play every down. You're going to have that continuity at the center position. But Caden Haas was that number two last year, so something to keep an eye on with Haas. Seth Willis, true freshman offensive tackle, served a mission the past 2 years, 6'5", 290-pound kid out of Sandy Hook, Connecticut. He committed to BYU back in 2017 or 2016, part of the class of 2017, was one of the summer BYU football camp guys. And that's one thing I've kind of missed this summer is the BYU football summer camp circuit, because June was always a big month for BYU football recruiting, and it's been slow this month just because there's been no camps, and camps were kind of the lifeblood of BYU recruiting classes. But it kind of works out in all reality, because the 2021 class, it's going to be low in numbers. You're talking about maybe, what, 10 guys, 11 guys, maybe max? So, honestly, it works out for BYU that there was no camps this year, but it's still a great way to gauge personnel or recruits and young promising talent. I remember years ago when Ross Sappa was an eighth grader, and I remember the reports from guys like Brandon Gurney back in the TBS days, and you Cougar fans that are diehards, you remember that stuff. Like, Ross Sappa was just the star as an eighth grader, and you're thinking, this guy's going to be the next big thing at wide receiver. Ross Sappa, the next LDS great, you know, skill player that BYU's got to land, and they got him over Texas. So BYU football camps are an important piece, but it's honestly not a big deal this year because BYU's 2021 class is pretty much full, and 2022 is going to be very light as well. But that's your player countdown, getting up to speed on BYU football. So we're back on track. We'll get back at it tomorrow with number 71. We're 72 days away till BYU football kicks it off against the Utes, 71 days tomorrow. So cannot wait for that. Going to get back at it on the podcast every single day. So you can follow me on Twitter at @Mitch_Harper, Mitch Harper KSL on Instagram, and follow KSL Sports and KSLSports.com. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google Play, and Spotify. Catch you tomorrow here on the Cougar Tracks podcast, powered by KSLSports.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.